present 7 years of work in 15 minutes. So hold to your seats. It's going to be whenever this shows up fast. The first thing is that I would like to recognize that this effort would not be possible without the support of NIDCR, the University of Michigan Delta Dental Fund, and the thousands of people who worked in making this happen. It's not an easy process. It's a difficult process to do these things. In the process, we have all reinvented ourselves and discovered ourselves better. I think Dushyanka showed the slide. We started with a very basic questions. We're always being asked why you did it this way. We want to understand intra-group disparities, not between group disparities. I don't want to compare rich people with poor people. I want to know why poor people are healthy and why poor people have bad health. That's an important question, which always is forgotten when the reviewers review the studies. So this is the basic question we started with, which is the theme for how we design the studies. We focus on African-American children under age of 6 and their caregivers. And we took a lot of time and focus groups to define who is a caregiver. Is the person who makes decisions about care, health care, dental care, as well as the feed, take care of the mouth and teeth, and visit the doctor or dentist. So we use this definition to define a caregiver. Household income was below 250 percentile of the 2000 poverty level. We focused on 39 census tracts, which have the highest concentrations of African-American children, as well as they have higher concentration of families below in poverty. So this is where we want to, it's a large geographic area within the city of Detroit, where we selected census tracts and worked with blocks of households. And the design is basically three waves of data collection to understand. The next initiative I would have is not going to be called can do or will do, but is doing. And I'm quitting the business of presenting understanding. Understanding will not change anything. It's the doing that's going to change, and we have to move to doing things. So wave one was understanding the determinants of disparities or variation in dental caries, to a certain extent periodontal disease, among the families. And then in wave two, we followed again with data collection trends over time. And wave three, the same thing. We introduced a motivational interviewing educational trial in wave two, and we're evaluating it now in wave three, which we collected the data and we're still in the analysis. So we talk about wave one, wave two, wave three, and between them were two-year windows, 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005, and 2007. So that's basically the design of the study, two-stage selection of African-American families. We listed about 17,000 dwellings or buildings. Some of them are garages, vacant lots, whatever they are. Of those, about 14,000 were housing units. We then sampled about 12,655 housing units randomly. Of those, we found about 13,802 had an eligible African-American child under 6 years of age, which is 14.2% of all households. 1,000 families completed the first wave, which is very good, really, 1,000 out of 1,386. And then 77% came to wave two, which is excellent. And then 64% of the 1,021 families came to wave three. Now, there's a lot of stories. This is like the one-liner that takes about 6 years of your life to do it. It's not an easy process to track people. They keep moving. Phones don't work after 1 month, and you require a system. And when you discover the system that do it, it is achievable. And people told us it's not going to happen. It happened. We have a central site. We screen and recruit and schedule live. They come to a central site. We pay them $100 to cover transportation and lost time. And the data collection takes about 3 hours. And we had a lot of fights to reduce that 3 hours because it was initially 6 hours. And a lot of aggravation among the investigators because we cut their questionnaires. Psychological behavioral determinants of health, lead exposure. We did blood and saliva, adults only in wave one and children only in wave two. The children, we only collected blood from them because we did not find a correlation between lead in saliva and lead in blood to rely on saliva alone to measure lead. And we extensive nutrition, adult and children. Actually, the food frequency, the block company has a booth in the exhibit. You can see them. They have now an online system to collect data. These are the questionnaires we use. We examined caries in adults and children, periodontal health. We just did in wave one for periodontal health because our focus was on dental caries. We developed with international group of experts, cardiologists, public health, dentists, restorative dentists, the International Caries Detection and Assessment System. We are the only center that used it, maybe because we didn't know what we're doing and people wanted to be sure that what we're doing is right before they jump and use it. It's really a system that provides high yield in terms of knowledge and information about caries. Excellent reliability is now the basis for the new ICCS system, which you haven't heard about because it's not published. It's the ADA-FDI system called the International Caries Classification System, which is now available in PowerPoint and documents in FDI and ADA. There's a lot more work to be done. And then it's really the ICDAS has been adopted by over 20 places around the world. Research Iceland did the whole survey using ICDAS, national survey. So early caries lesions, we identify them, we measure them, we code them separately. It's not stick or no stick. That's an old concept that we should not continue to follow. We looked at very early, we call these code ones, and you'll see code ones. You can only see them on smooth surfaces when the tooth is clean and dry. Sometimes they do appear on pits and fissures even when it's wet. And then we have code ones. This is another one of these code ones on smooth surfaces. These are lesions we want to prevent from progressing to cavitation. So I need to know how many of them, where they are, what's the epidemiology, so I can design programs that are really health promotion, you know, in terms of not treating the disease but preventing disease from progression. And then we have cavitation, different forms of it. So what we have learned so far, the families. The age of the caregivers was between 14 to 70. A lot of children are taken care of by their grandparents, parents, aunts, and so on. 95% were females. We had few males caregivers. 86% were mothers. And you can see the distribution of the other caregivers. 53% were unemployed. And you can see also the reported income. The majority have below $10,000. We're talking about the poorest of the poor in this country. Children age 0 to 5, the average age was 2.6, and 52% were female. So we have a good distribution of children, male, female, in the sample. Mobility was very high. We discovered a lot of things about tracking and learned from experience. Disconnected telephone numbers. Most of telephones that people use are prepaid cellular phones. So after you use them for 1 month, you buy another one. Families may temporarily live with neighbors, friends, or relatives. So you need someone to go track them from house to house to find them and locate them. So that's an interesting system that worked very well when we hired community. That's what led me to believe that community health workers is the ideal way to reach deep into low-income underrepresented minorities. I'm a member of the community health workers group here at APHA, and they have worked with the ADA. Dental caries, what we found, again, as the silent epidemic, it's not so silent. There's a lot of pain associated with it. We have at the age of 2, 27% of the children have severe early childhood caries. 7% have early childhood caries only. This is at the NIDCR definition. And you can see that overall, we have about 34% have early childhood caries and severe early childhood caries and 13% have early childhood caries only. Now, in a city that has only 2 pediatric dental clinics, that is a problem. There's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to go. So what we have to think of systems to provide care for this population, and we have expanded the federally qualified health centers, but more work is needed. As far as the new disease over time, you can see wave 1, wave 2, and wave 1, wave 3, and here we see about 65% have code 2, and about 54% have code 1. And code 3 to 6, which are the dentinal and cavitated type lesions, you also see a significant portion of the children have it between wave 1 and 3. This is the mean number of new non-cavitated and cavitated lesions. Again, there's a significant development and progression of caries in this population, which is troublesome. We sometimes feel frustrated by seeing the level of disease. The percentage of non-cavitated and cavitated lesions in permanent teeth, we see less of that. But what you see here is mostly code 1 and code 2 in ICDAS, which often is missed when you use the NIDCR criteria, because these codes are either stick, no stick, and they don't stick. So some of them will be coded and some of them will not be coded. Now, from a design of a program, that is crucial. I'll underline that in terms of who will target these children and what type of services they will receive. The mean number is, again, 1.3 code 1, 1.6 code 2, and you see 0.3 is only, in 4 years, is 3 to 6. So that is not a very high level of advancement, but it's still, you have a lot of sort of the silent epidemic happening. You see the tsunami, the wave coming over time if these lesions do progress, and they do progress in this population. This may be a complex slide, but I'm going to summarize it in two sentences. The first thing is age is important. Early lesions in young children are more likely to progress than early lesion in older children. So below 3 years and above 3 years is a very good cutoff point. And code 2 in ICDAS does progress a lot more than code 1, so because it's a more advanced stage. So just knowing when do you intervene is very important from a preventive point of view. So the summary is that while the children and caregivers have advanced dental caries only, mild forms of dental caries, and similarly with periodontal disease, which I don't have the time to present, are more common. Hence, preventive or minimal interventions are indicated. Few other things about food intake. High levels of tooth decay were associated with higher consumption of soda and powdered sugared sports drink. This is common. We found significant, consistent association with sugar intake and dental caries, which we did not find in other studies published in the literature because it's a totally different population. Population that doesn't have a lot of treatment with a high concentration and high frequency of intake of sugar foods. 54% of all sugar consumed came from sugar beverages. Children who consumed more soft drinks as they age were more likely to have, after 2 years, greater number of new lesions and new filled services. Children who were consistently high consumers of soft drinks were also more likely to have greater number of new filled services after 2 years. We have about now 24 publications, so I'm trying to summarize the highlights of these publications. Now, consistently high soft drinkers have significantly higher level of mean number of new decayed missing tooth services compared to those who are consistently high milk or juice consumers. We find 100% concentrated juice to be not as problematic as soft drinks. And milk as well is not problematic. It may cause caries, but significantly less than soft drinks. This is interesting. Most frequently consumed food items were cold cereal, potato chips, sliced cheese, bread, bologna, and ketchup. Very healthy foods for children. That's what's available in these communities. So be careful when we should be careful when we advise children not to eat something and not to drink something when there isn't something in the community that's healthy that they could get, other than the store and the gas station. No vegetables were in the top 18 most frequently consumed foods in children. 54% of sugar intake came from sweetened beverages, as I said before. So this is a very important, we looked at obesity. Some of the researchers working with us looked beyond just dental, and this is an interesting finding, that the children who are obese, young children who are obese in Detroit did not grow out of it compared to national studies. They remained obese of our time. And these are talking about children 1, 2, 3, 4 years of age. And this is a distribution. If the child was obese, the overweight, if you look at the last column here, 70% chance that they will be overweight. Thank you. I thought you were giving me a note about time.
You have 2 minutes.
2 minutes. 79% of caregivers endorsed. This is the most consistent finding. If the caregiver had fatalistic belief about the child health, oral health, the child will develop dental caries. This is consistent finding, so we need to address that. Children of fatalistic caregivers brush less frequently, experience more severe disease at baseline, and experience more new disease over a two-year period. That's an important thing. You can put fluoride in them, you can seal them, but if the parents think they're going to develop decay, they will develop decay. Caregiver fatalism and new tooth decay, this is the data, fatal. You can see that the graph is higher here. I think this will work. And you can see the U-shaped here, became fatal. Even when they became fatal between the waves, they had higher level compared to the other ones. If the mothers were confident in their ability, this is Tracy, I think she is here in the audience, were confident in their ability to make sure that the child teeth were brushed, children brushed more frequently. being tired, busy, depressed were most common situations in which the mothers were not confident that they could take care of their children's health. And this is the situation that exists in this population. I'm quickly going to also share some of the data that we have in using Medicaid data between two waves and see what happens to disease over time. And basically is that the children who receive only preventive care are not different than the children who receive no dental care at all. In other words, they went to dentists who only provide preventive care. They skimmed the system. Maybe I should not be so politically incorrect. But they did only the four procedures for prevention and left the treatment. So that didn't work as well as the children who went to a dentist in terms of comprehensive care. I'm only looking at cavities that remained untreated after 2 years. So cavities after 2 years remained untreated in these children. So we apply fluoride and sealants, but cavities are still there, which is not a good biologically sound approach to provide prevention. So there's a lot of policy issues here. I'm not going to have time to talk about the motivational interviewing, but that we have two groups. One is a DVD only, in which the caregivers were shown an 18-minute video focusing on how to keep a child free from tooth decay, which was designed by community members and the staff and tailored for their language level, literacy level, and so on. And brochure was given, which has standard recipe, or what we tell everyone when they go to the dentist. The other one was really developed personal goals. There's a MI sessions before and after the video. The video is introduced in a positive way. We talked about barriers. They developed their own goals, and we had a tailored brochure given to them. And we followed that after a couple of weeks to months with another call over the phone. We sent them more information. We did extensive evaluation. I'll just show you the results because of time. In the short term, we find that the MI children, the MI caregivers, report ensuring child brushes at bedtime and ensuring child brushes twice a day were more significantly more likely than the children in the very positive control group that we have. But the clinical outcomes are not appearing the same. And this is not uncommon in all MI studies. And what shows is that we need to do frequent MI sessions, frequent follow-ups with them, not just one-shot deal. Sure, this is a difficult population to reach, but we have to think of ways to do it. So the policy implications, and I'll finish in 1 second, we need comprehensive, integrated, and sustainable models to combat the problem of tooth decay in children and adults. We cannot just target one intervention. It has to be a multitude of interventions working in sync to achieve the results. Medicaid policy should change to mandate that comprehensive care should be provided and not only preventive care. Engagement of families and organizations in developing solutions is essential, and Lucille Smith will talk more about that. Disparities can only be reduced by targeting the root causes of inequities, and we heard the presentation before this one talking about that, and inequalities in society. We as a dental community have to be active, politically active, in addressing societal inequities and inequalities. We cannot just focus on teeth and the oral cavity. We have to focus on society. I don't see a dentist active in the social arena or the political arena to talk about these issues. We have to be. So the next steps, we have a U01 project. I just discovered what this is about 2 months ago. We are focusing on interventions that focus on that try to address dental anxiety, social support, motivational education, management and coordination of dental care with federally qualified health centers, community health centers, best clinical care focusing on prevention and treatment. Community home follow-up starts in 2010, and we will use community health workers to achieve that as the method to reach out into the communities. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr.